Blog Talk Radio.
Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, then click on the Dare to Win button. When you click on Listen Live, you will be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, on the follow button. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Fermi, who, like me, is a member of UU. Our topic for tonight is No Guns for Negroes. Peace, Brother Fermi. How are you doing tonight?
Peace, Sister Q. Glad to be with you and the family again, and excited to learn what you're going to bring to us and the history that's involved, and to participate and ask some questions.
Okay, awesome. So we can go ahead and get started.
Well, first thing I wanted to ask, I'm sure other people would have the same question, is why did you choose the title No Guns for Negroes?
No Guns for Negroes is the title of a documentary. It's about a history of gun control in the U.S. And since I wanted to talk about gun control tonight, and the official, unofficial gun control policy in the United States, which is No Guns for Negroes.
Okay, okay. And family, listen intently, and we welcome everybody, including myself, asking questions. next thing I want to ask, Sister Q, is why do you say No Guns for Negroes is the official, unofficial gun control policy in the U.S.?
Okay. So as we're having this discussion, let's remember that the Constitution of the United States does not give rights. The Constitution itself says that men are endowed by their Creator with unalienable rights. So the Second Amendment addresses one of those rights, the so-called right to keep and bear arms. Prior to the Civil War, some people argued that slavery was unconstitutional because a slave is someone who cannot possess guns. And the Constitution guarantees every man that right. The Dred Scott decision, which was issued in 1857, Supreme Court Chief Justice Roger B. Taney said free blacks were not citizens. If they were, free blacks would have the right to keep and bear arms wherever they went. So, again, it was about, everything is about whether or not black folks get to keep and bear arms. Immediately after the Civil War, the Southern states enacted what they call black codes. The purpose of those were to keep black folk in check. In Mississippi, for example, the policy was that no freedman shall keep or carry firearms of any kind or any ammunition without police permission, which sounds like what we have today, which is that, you know, the police have to have a register of who owns a gun in their jurisdiction. When Congress passed the Freedmen's Bureau Act in 1865, it stated the constitutional right to bear arms shall be secured to and enjoyed by all of the citizens. That included black citizens, okay? And that was followed by the Civil Rights Act and the 14th Amendment. When they were discussing whether or not they were going to pass the 14th Amendment, some folks in Congress repeatedly stated that purpose of the 14th Amendment was to guarantee that freedmen could exercise their Second Amendment right to own guns for self-defense. And we know that amendment was passed in 1868. However, the states continued to, see, that's on the federal level. So the states continued to pass legislation to keep blacks free and freed, because there was a distinction at that time, from owning guns and or ammunition for their self-defense. Such legislation included banning the sale of some less expensive types of guns to price black folk out of the market and requiring, again, permits to own or carry guns. So in so this, you know, kept going on back and forth. And in 1941, a Florida judge explained that these laws that they were passing in the states were passed for the purpose of disarming the Negro laborers, and they were never intended to be applied to the white citizenship or the white population. And then in about the 1950s, we had John Salter, who was a professor at Tougaloo College and one of the chief organizers of the NAACP Jackson movement during the early 1960s. And he wrote that no one knows what kind of massive racist retaliation would have been directed against grassroots black people had the black community not had a healthy measure of firearms within it. So that's like the back and forth between the feds and the state on whether or not, and that's why I say it's the official, unofficial policy is that we're not, that there are no guns.
Good, powerful message. Given the history that you've just talked about, how are black folks being persuaded to demand to be disarmed today?
Okay, so let's go back to the discussion we had a couple of months ago about the Mockingbird media. And we'll take some quotes from there. George Soros said, "The American black is highly emotional and is therefore very easily manipulated." Then we had Richard Vallant, who was a former president of CBS News, and he said, "Our job is to give people not what they want, but what we decide they ought to have." Malcolm X. So it's all mind manipulation, okay? So Malcolm X said, "The media is the most powerful entity on earth. The press is so powerful in its image-making role, it can make a criminal look like he's the victim and make the victim look like he's the criminal. If you aren't careful, the newspapers will have you hating the people who are being oppressed and loving the people who are doing the oppressing." Okay. So when we talked about the Mockingbird media, we talked about Operation Mockingbird, which is a CIA project that began in the 1950s, in which CIA recruited American journalists into a propaganda network. The recruited journalists were put on payroll by the CIA and were often given stories that had been pre-written by the CIA and that the stories promoted the views of the Central Intelligence Agency. So you weren't getting the news, you were getting what CIA propaganda, basically. And William Casey, who was the CIA director in, I think it's 1981, said, "We'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." So that's the plan. So now, and we also spoke then about crisis actors, false flags, and staged events. A crisis actor is generally, defined as a professional or volunteer actor who plays a role in a staged drill in order to prepare or train first responders for a specific emergency scenario. And sometimes what happens is these drills ported on as if they are actual events and are then fed to the public as news. So what we have going on is that most, if not all, of the recent so-called mass shootings that get reported by the Mockingbird media are staged events or drills using crisis actors. All of these so-called shootings take place in what they call gun-free zones, and the immediate response is always, we have to have more gun control. So that's to put in your mind the fear that that you could be anywhere and, you know, get shot. And so you think that you're calling for the government to implement gun control so you can be safe.
Wow. Well, what you just talked about, it sounds like an example of the fifth-generation warfare Brother Shabaka talked about a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah. It is fifth-generation warfare. And in fifth-generation warfare, the battlefield is your mind. So there are government actors who want to get rid of a large portion of the U.S. population. That's difficult to do right now because a lot of the population is armed. So they are trying not to have to force gun control laws through because they don't want to be seen as a tyrannical government. After all, this is what we're told is a democracy. So, you know, they can't just, you know, rain down on people like that. So what they do is they get the mockingbird media to terrorize the people with a steady diet of so-called random gun violence. They have the media suggest that the only solution that is what they want to have happen, which is gun control. And then after a while, the people will demand that the government implement gun control because that's the only suggestion that they keep hearing to solve the problem. So then people figure, well, that must be the only thing that can happen. Okay, so then the government actors who actually want gun control will pretend that, you know, they don't really want to do that because they don't want to violate the rights of the people. But the gun violence keeps going on and there's nothing else that they can do. So then they go ahead and they disarm the people. Okay. And the people at this point having been terrorized by the media over a period of time will be so grateful for the government stepping in and, you know, interacting during the gun control thing that they'll be like, oh, well, thank you for the government because now we're safe. At that point, the government, the actors who wanted to kill all those people anyway, they can take their time and kill off whoever they want to kill at their leisure because the people don't have any arms to defend themselves. And we have seen this take place in other countries over the years, and we're trying to bring the same thing to the U.S. So that's why it's to feed you a problem and give you the notion that what I want to do to you anyway is the only solution for the problem. That doesn't really exist because, remember, these shootings are basically staged events, and they put them on the news to cause people to feel afraid.
Cool. Aren't we now being told that white males, white supremacy, and other things are the greatest threat to democracy?
Well, yeah, that's what they're putting on the news at this time. But we cannot allow ourselves to be deceived by the propaganda. That's what that is, you know, propaganda against white males and white supremacy and all that other stuff that they're saying are threats to democracy. Black folks globally remain the primary target of the depopulation agenda. And that is agenda number one. All these things that they got going on, you know, the global warming and the COVID and all this other crazy stuff, all of that is really a cover for the fact that they want to depopulate the planet. And they keep saying that they want to depopulate the planet. The other day we had Kerry, K-E-R-R-Y, saying that farmers have to stop growing food so that, you know, because of the climate crisis. So we cannot lose sight of the fact that everything we see is has one agenda behind it, and that is to get rid of a whole bunch of folks. And since the predominant numbers on the planet are dark-skinned people, it's us that they want to get rid of. And we can, you know, go back to what we said in the beginning. It's not the Constitution doesn't give you the right to defend yourself. Your right to defend yourself is given to you by the Creator. So it doesn't really matter if there's a Second Amendment or a Constitution or anything, whatever. You always have the right to defend yourself. And I think that's part of the reason why they keep saying the Second Amendment, because they don't want you to realize Second Amendment is not the ultimate law. You know, the Creator created you with the rights, all of the rights that they say in the Constitution. They're saying that all of these rights were given to you by the Creator. And then they keep talking about the Constitution as if that's where the rights come from. But the Constitution itself said that these rights were given to you by the Creator. So we need to bear that in mind as we say, you know, we're the weapon. Like they keep saying, you got to get rid of the, what do they call them? Different kind of assault weapons. That's what they call them. Mm-hmm. Assault weapons and all these different kind of weapons. They say that mm-hmm. we need to get rid of. You are the weapon. Everything you pick up is a tool. It's just mm-hmm. if they take one tool, you pick up another tool. It's that simple. You always have the right to defend yourself with whatever tool is handy. So that's basic. That's basically it. That's what I wanted to talk about regarding gun control or the a history of gun control. Because you know, we don't really know the we're not taught in school we'll say the history of how the back and forth with should we be armed, should we not be armed, and we're not taught the underlying thing where it says where the judge says, well, okay, they passed these laws, but we don't mean to disarm white people. We want to disarm the Negro. So that's, we passed the law so we could disarm the Negro or the black people, whatever, however they're identified at whatever point in history. So that was it. I just wanted to bring that a little bit forward.
And family, I know people out there listening got some further questions. I'm on a, I'm sure you're going to give us some information about it. The topic is No Guns for Negroes. But on the Facebook page, there's an image of Robert and I believe his wife, Sister Mabel Williams.
Uh-huh.
Tell us about them, and they had a book that had a different title.
Yeah, their book was called Negroes with Guns. And
mm-hmm.
I don't remember the whole story right now. They were, I think he was the president of the NAACP in Monroe, North Carolina. This was in the 60s mm-hmm. or something like that. And he was
okay.
encouraging his chapter of the NAACP to arm themselves and protect themselves against what we call night riders, you know, the people,
mm-hmm.
the white folks
mm-hmm.
that would come through and shoot up the town at night and what have you.
Yes.
And
yes.
he, I think the national chapter or the national body of the NAACP came down on him, and I think that he was relieved of his duties because they felt that he should not be encouraging his captive to behave in that way, to defend themselves, basically. So that's
yes.
all I at some point I think he and his wife had to leave because they were set up. And they left the country, and they did come back, and I think they were exonerated of whatever charges had been pressed against them. One of which I think was that they were accused of kidnapping a white lady or something, and the white lady herself said that what happened was she came through town and stuff was going on, or she came through their section and stuff was going on, and to protect her, they had her go, I think it was their house, I'm not for sure, but they had her go into a place where she could be safe. And then the word was passed out that they had kidnapped this woman, and I think that was what led to the whole thing with them having the fleet. I'm not sure about all of that. So anybody listening that got the story straight, please call and help a sister out. But they did come back, and the lady did testify on their behalf that, no, they didn't kidnap her. No, they made sure she was safe, and they didn't do anything to her. And that was... I think they left North Carolina and they went to the north, but I don't remember what city they went to. And he died a few years back, and he died earlier, and then his wife Mabel died. I would say within the last 5 years or something like that, she passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading about her passing recently. But yeah, they were. And when you think about the NAACP, the national office of the NAACP came down on them and said that they should not be encouraging people to carry arms and whatever. But we know that the NAACP was created by Jewish people in order to, like, control black folks and what happened in the black community. So then that's not surprising that the NAACP wouldn't want them on themselves.
Okay. That's interesting what you're talking about. And there's some questions about why in whatever chapters of the NAACP wouldn't want that to happen in terms of the people
mm-hmm.
arming themselves to defend themselves. But there were some places, and before Robert and his wife were forced to leave, and I'm pretty sure they left the country and went to Algiers. But in any case, wherever they went, before they left, they had in their community that had harassment from the Knight Riders, they put their minds together and instituted a plan in their rural area, I believe. And when the Knight Riders came again, they surprised the Knight Riders because they defend themselves. And also, even though I want to make sure that our people remember what you brought to us tonight concerning the fifth generation warfare, and the battlefield is the mind, and that's the most powerful weapon that they're concerned about, but it's always been the most powerful weapon we can use.
Yes.
And also just wanted to mention, I saw it recently. It happened, I think it was reported on 2 years, 2022. And it says, the headline says, a new study suggested black Southerners' access to firearms reduced lynching, reduced. And it says a lot right there.
Well, you know, in my family, there's a story of a man who saved himself because he had guns. You know, the Knight Riders came to call, and well, to start the story, I'll just say the black man that I'm talking about had land. He was a landowner. And this was in Alachua County, Florida. And he had also one of the white landowners came and asked him, come help him bring in. The white guy asked the black guy to help him bring in his crops.
Mm-hmm.
And the black guy told him that he could not do that because he had to bring in his own crops.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
The white guy took exception to the fact that this uppity whatever told him no.
Mm-hmm.
So he went away, and he came back in a couple of days. And he said to the black guy, you have a gun because I just saw a snake by your fence and I want to shoot the snake. So the black guy said, no, I don't have one. So he went away. And a couple of days later, another white guy came. He said, they're planning a visit for you this weekend on Friday.
Mm.
He said, I can't do anything for you, but then I have some bullets. I'll give you some bullets. So he gave him some bullets. So the black guy went to the sheriff, and he told the sheriff that he had word that the Klan was coming to visit him on Friday night. So the sheriff said to him, well, go home. Lock yourself in your house. Do not, if they come, don't answer the door. Don't say anything to them. However, if they break in your door, you have the right to defend yourself. So the guy went, he took his family to my cousin, my uncle's father's house. This was, I don't know what year it was. He took his family to my uncle's house. That's how I got the story, because my uncle told it to me later, years later. And he said, so the sheriff told him to go home and lock himself. So Friday night after dinner, he took his wife to my uncle's father's house. And he told his wife to stay there until he came back to get her. And he went home, and he turned the lights out, and he was sitting in his house in the dark. And at a certain time, you know, he had a bunch of visitors, and they called for him, and he didn't answer. And they said, "We know you're in there. Open the door. We just want to talk." And he didn't answer. And they broke his door down. And when they broke his door down, he started shooting. And he ran, and he shot anything that moved. He shot it. And he, they said he had long arms and short arms, and he just shot up everybody. And he ran to my uncle's father's house, and my uncle's father told him to, he took him to the sheriff. So they went to the sheriff's office and told him, and he told the sheriff what happened. So the sheriff told him to go back to my uncle's house and stay there, and the sheriff would come and get them when everything was cleaned up. So they went back to my uncle's father's house, and the sheriff rounded up some men, and they went and they picked up the bodies or picked up whoever was injured or whatever. And they wouldn't let any black people in help clean up, because they didn't want black people to know how many white men this guy had, had taken out. But they said after that it was no Klan chapter in that county. He had, injured so many of them. And they said on Sunday, that happened Friday night. So Sunday they said that in the white churches, the pastors were asking people if you had, like your husband or your brother or some male member of your family went out Friday night and he hasn't come home yet. Mm-hmm. The sheriff wants you to come and see him. Mm-hmm. Because some of the people, they didn't live in the county. The sheriff didn't know who they were. They came from other places. So that's one, if one well-armed black man could do that, imagine what, a stand of black armed black men could do.
Yeah, and that takes me back to what you read earlier, and I mentioned the battlefield is the mind. And if we take a stand, then we're determined to live and be free. And we keep ourselves trained in whatever we need to be trained in, whether it's growing food or whatever. And the weapons that we as a people really need to spend some major time also, along with the mechanical arms as a backup, elevating our minds in a powerful way to use as weapons.
Exactly.
Because right. Others are taking artificial intelligence and training their minds to be using it as weapons against people along with the robot. We've got to do that, and it's in our history to stand up. The ones that got the determination. And when I mentioned that article from 2022, they talk about the number of folks that the lynchings were reduced because of having firearms. And what you just talked about was another real life example that you know about from family that was passed on, and it didn't get kept away from you and others that got to hear it from living people.
But
and also just like to add that in that article that was talking about the reduced lynchings, and this was just a little less than 2 years ago, they had on a cover page lynch laws and its phases. And this was a pamphlet that was written by Sister Freedom Fighter Ida B. Wells. Okay. She was standing up against the lynching. And so going back to the mind again, when we stand up in our mind before we fire any bullets, we have transformed a lot of things in our favor and don't realize that.
For sure. For sure. Like I said,
and,
the line is the weapon. And so anything
yeah.
else is just a tool.
What you just said, to me, it brings forth the question is, why aren't we using our minds, our powerful minds? It's there waiting for us to use it to defend us in this battlefield, this war that has never stopped being waged on us since the invaders first came to attack us. They have never stopped, but they're advancing with more than bullets. And the question would be, why aren't we responding appropriately? It's kind of like Francis Welsing, sister, freedom fighter, Francis Welsing ancestor, years ago, long time ago, in the 80s and 90s for sure, she used to be on South Carolina television with Lister Belt Middleton, who was a very valuable brother also, another ancestor. But normally when they were on the TV set, they would have a table with a chessboard sitting between them. And Francis mm-hmm. often stressed that what we must do, look at the chessboard, and what we must do is get our mind now, and we're talking about this battlefield is the mind. She would say,
mm-hmm.
get our mind on the black side of the chessboard. So when the ones on the other side of the chessboard make a move, we counter that to keep them from checkmating us.
Mm-hmm.
But just like what she was emphasizing, chess is a deep game related to the mind. And if you're not
sure.
sharp, not only do you need to take heed to what she said about put your mind on the black side of the chessboard, but you got to have some content in there, some awareness, some wisdom, some insights, and have a sharp, trained mind to defend yourself on the battlefield.
I agree with that for sure. And I think that part of the problem is that we're indoctrinated in institutions that teach us that we are incapable of doing anything for ourselves. So we hear stories all the time about how we are the victim of everything, or
mm-hmm.
how we were, you know, how we get killed and things. And the other than the story of that I just told you that my uncle told me,
mm-hmm.
We don't hear stories generally of people actually, one man, one person standing up and doing something about
mm-hmm.
The situation they find themselves. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a group of people getting together, but it starts with one person or one man or one woman deciding to do something. Then a second and a third, and then you'll have a group. But
mm-hmm.
we're basically taught that even a group is ineffective. So if the group can't do anything, what chance do I by my one self have?
Mm-hmm.
And we are stymied, I think. We're defeated in our mind. Again, it's the battlefield. You teach us
mm-hmm.
to be defeated in our mind. We won't even stand up. And that happens to us too much. I mean, why would your adversary teach you is... It really doesn't make sense on our side to expect our adversary to teach us or our children anything that's going to help us defeat them. So even if they know of stories that will uplift us and cause us to think that we can do something about our own situation, they're not going to tell it to us. Why should they? You know, they want to beat us down and keep us from even thinking that we can rise up. It hasn't worked, but that's still their plan. If we look at Ulu, how many members are there of Ulu that are working together to create a new reality for ourselves and our people?
And so it's our responsibility to do the work to bring forth more sisters and brothers like the ones in Ulu that are doing the work, in other organizations that's doing the work. It's our responsibility. That's why the African wisdom said, those who know must teach. And we, in my view, I think it's often overlooked that we've got to have a comprehensive plan dealing with this battlefield and dealing with our mind, a comprehensive plan that would include all areas of our people activity. So it's like Neely Fuller's book, The Code System, you know, talks about, I'm just naming off some of them, but he talks about religion, politics, sex, and war. But he was saying that those are areas of people activity that we must address and make sure that we're following the proper way of living out those things. And if any of those things are working against us, we've got to take corrective action. And so we're failing to nurture the courage to be like that one man, your uncle, if that's who it was, and others like him, that if that was being nurtured in all areas of our lives. But if we engage in our lives in behaviors that weakens our will, we'll actually engage in things that's bringing forth self-destruction, like the song said a long time ago, or we commit self-genocide. And so it's just like early next month, the European holiday, the 4th of July, it's very understandable by Africans that are into deep thought and have really looked at what's happened in the past and what's currently happening and what's easing up on us, including the robot thing, the artificial intelligence. They know that if I were waving a flag on the 4th of July, it would say something about how dedicated I am not to the freedom movement. And so we just got to be able to look at that whole picture. And if today I saw in a store and they had a snack area and I saw a few sisters and brothers eating and the table was loaded up with ketchup and french fries and meat. And if I took a picture of them and showed it to you, it was really hurtful. But they're working against their sanity. They're working against their well-being. And in the process, it's beating them down to where they don't have a battlefield mindset. They don't have a liberation freedom mindset. And it's just like, I have been on the radio, and the subject was about freedom. And it probably was useless to Q asked the question in the beginning, what made me choose this subject about, I might have said, do black people want to be free, or either black people don't want to be free, however I worded it, but it was related to freedom. But my answer in the beginning of why was because I've been looking around for a long time, and I still do. And almost all of the years of my life, the larger percentage of my life, most or the largest percentage of our people that I have ever known, never, to this day, never initiate a conversation about being free. They never do that. Anything but, related to us, we'll go right ahead.
We have a caller on the line. So.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and take that. Okay. And then.
Good.
Caller with the last four digits, 3440. Please state your name where you're calling from. Make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Yes, good evening, Sister Q and Brother Thurman. This is Brother Shabaka calling from South Florida. You have a very dynamic program, particularly the disarming and laying a history, and then bringing it to the fact that Brother Thurman now is asking, do black people want to be free? When you compound that with propaganda that we've been exposed to. I want to ask this or explore this in the last couple of minutes that you all have, and that is a lot of times when Brother Auntie is on and he talks about the climate warming and stuff like that, which I agree is, you know, part of that is a fear mongering of. That we have really among ourselves, African people, we have people who are experienced and can scientifically understand if what is being claimed on the media is true or not true. Now, what I mean by that, yes, we know that within our generation or our life expectancy, we have experienced climatic conditions that different when we were younger. But the claim by the Europeans is that we'll be at the point of no return in 10 years, really 7 years now. My question to you is this, given the propaganda that you think that we are, everybody, you know, is controlled by, from your, you see the manifestation of it. You see it, you know, you go outside your house, your home, and you interact with the community, and you see the effects of propaganda. And then even not only the effects of propaganda, but Brother Zerman, let me go back to you when you say that when Neely Fuller tried to warn us about, it's not only the propaganda machine and the tools that are used to control us via propaganda, but there's other areas in which the European attempts to control and influence our behavior. How much time do we have? How much time do we have, given what you see happening, the impact of that, since we're not looking at freedom, we want to be like white folks. We don't want to be free. We just want to be able to do like what they do. How much time do we have? And I'll listen for your response.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the question. Brother Thurman, you want to answer or you want me to answer?
Go right ahead, sister.
Beg pardon?
Yes, go right ahead. You. Sisters.
Okay, my
queens.
Answer is we've always been here and we're going to always be here. The circumstance may differ from time to time, but we are going to be here. It will not be all of us who will be here, but who needs to be here will be here. I'll be here. I can speak for myself. I'll be here.
Yes.
Anybody else want to raise their hand, they can raise their hand. They'll be here.
Yes.
Del Jones used to say, we're not all going to make it. So
yes,
you can't worry about those who are not going to be here. You can share what you can share with them, what they're receptive to, but you, I think, cannot stop your flow. in order to drag them along when they have shown no interest in coming along.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that, and see, when it comes to the power of our mind, that's just another dimension that we can go to living in this body right here on this planet. And it's not that we couldn't go somewhere besides this planet. But if the people are not aware of that, and then the ones that are opening up to those kind of things of the mind and the powers of the mind, they have the responsibility not to hold the hands physically of the ones that don't want to move forward. Spiritually, reach out and hold their hand forever. But as you're moving forward, look back from time to time and reach your hand out spiritually and say, come on. But don't let them get a death grip and you end up dying and drowning because they're pulling the other way. But ideally, we would, you know, as you had said earlier, when we do it as a group, there's it powers up the energy more dramatically. And if it's just one of us, but we need as many that we can awaken to come with us, but we can't wait for them. So it's just like wellness. There's some high-level approaches to wellness, which is all that nature and the universe's forces and sources and nutrients. But we know that those of us that are on that path, and I'm one of them, we know that the masses of the people that we know and we see, and like the sisters and brothers that I saw today that were sitting at the table just stuffing themselves with French fries, greasy French fries, and some greasy meat and ketchup. And then, I mean, they had a big spread for each one, for each person. And they were clearly not healthy, but they don't know. And so we still got the responsibility, just like we do when we come on the air. Do what the ancestors said, those who know must teach. And the more that we teach, the more we relearn and get greater clarity of whatever it is we're speaking on.
Right.
But so Dick Gregory said many years ago, a long time ago in the 90s, he said he had seen a new map of the United States, and there were fewer people and more parks. And he said, it's going to be all right with or without people. And then he said, but it sure would be a whole lot better with us. And so the sisters and brothers that have been miseducated and duped and tricked and deceived and just bamboozled, you know, and they have fell for the lies in religion, politics, sex and war, and those kind of things. We've got to help them to get up on the higher and higher dimensions and go back to what our ancient ancestors put in stone and big monuments and writings that they put there to bring us back to the spiritual concepts that would have us having power. The power that they had to be able to travel to other planets and other dimensions, the power that they had to, you know, put these massive stones, with the power that they had to go within and get a picture, an engineered drawing in their mind of the pyramid and how it's going to be built. Not a bunch of pieces of paper stretched out on an engineer's drawing board, but in their mind. And we still have it. But we got to go for it. We got to tap back into it, and we got to do it. We got to use every area that we can, including the diet and the nutrition, that will help open up the third eye. Because when you got the cheeseburger and the cheese and the soda in the diet, third eye, the mind's eye, tends to be closed up, very closed.
Yeah.
And we got to take this thing about defending ourselves very, very serious. And so on my part, I want to thank you, sister, for everything that you brought tonight, because you definitely helped open our eyes about the documentary. And you brought the message to us, sister, and you give us some whatever you got for us as we close out.
Okay, well, as we close out, I just want to, I'm going to go to church on you. It says, when a strong man, fully armed, guards his own house, his possessions are safe. And that's from the New Testament of the Bible, Luke 11:21. I want to thank you. thank you, Brother Sermon. I want to thank everybody that joined us for this evening. Thank you to Brother Shabaka, who gave us something, a question to think on, you know, how far are we willing to go back to bring forward those who are dragging their feet? And we have to be, that's a question we always have to have in our minds. So we're inviting everyone to join us again next Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. And with that, I will say peace.
Peace.
Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds. Don't you know? We're talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare line, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment line, sitting around waiting for. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. Poor people gonna rise up and take what's there. Don't you know you better run, run, run.
Talking about a revolution.